Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. The best NHL analysis and insight. It's what's on the lunch menu. Eat up. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hockey Central on the air. Welcome. Good afternoon. Good morning, depending on where you are watching slash listening right now. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sam will cast on the NHL Network stateside. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard alongside John Shannon. What are you doing, John?
I'm putting on my Dave Strader pin.
Hey, very nice. Always thinking of Dave. Keep Dave top of mind. Yes.
Stay healthy. Stay in our thoughts. And hope to see you back in the broadcast booth. So I got my Dave Strader pin.
Hey, man. Nice job, John. Alongside Gord Stellick as well. Friday's table here on the
pinless
broadcast. Yeah, pinless in Toronto. You and me both. But John's representing Mr. Strader, so that's good for all of us.
Yeah.
I want to talk about last night. We'll preview this evening as well. Normally, we get right on the Maple Leafs page, but I want to focus quickly on the other team in Ontario, and that's, of course, the Ottawa Senators. Pierre Dorion this morning making the announcement, and it's not good for Clark MacArthur. He will not play for the remainder of the season. Not exactly a shock. A disappointment, certainly. This is from the Patrick Seeloff hit in training camp as well. I know there was some...
Compounding of all the other concussions he's had, let's face it.
I know, it's, you know, you understand the athlete always wanted to come back, and I understand a broken arm, I understand a broken leg, I understand a fractured wrist.
Yeah.
Your brain is you. And I can't tell Clark MacArthur how to run his show, run his life, and run his business, but at a certain point, this isn't like Peter Forsberg just trying to find a boot that'll fit his foot.
Right.
This one, I mean, whenever you're dealing with someone who's later on in their career, and you're dealing with a brain injury, dealing with a concussion situation, you know, part of you really just wants to take the compassionate route and say there are bigger things than hockey.
It's difficult to tell a professional athlete that when he's in the prime of his life. And it's hard. The one thing I think for the Senators, if you had talked to people within the organization over the first 3.5 months of the season, was they always talked about MacArthur returning. They always talked about, you know, when MacArthur comes back, it's almost like making a quality trade and the value that he was to this team. So it's to me, it's just sad. To me, it's just sad that somebody as nice as Clark, as talented as he is, he's not, at this point, going to be able to continue his way of earning a living.
Ottawa Senators second in the Atlantic after the win yesterday against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mike Condon with the shutout, 2-0 is the final score. The Maple Leafs lost, combining that. And you're second and third in the Atlantic, Ottawa and Boston. Gore, your thoughts on Clark MacArthur?
Yeah, you know, first of all, because, you know, Shanny, I were just sort of saying it was expected. Well, no, I guess the announcement wasn't expected. It's just, as we know, the number of concussions. And when we saw, and people on TV are seeing it, the hit at training camp is kind of like, oh, my God, that's an unfortunate play. Then you go, oh, my goodness, it's Clark MacArthur. Yeah. And we know exactly, you know, what he was trying to bounce back from. Just 4 games he played last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gord Wilson chatting with him in Ottawa, same thing. And just 3 concussions, documented ones before that. And all the other things, you know, he was a guy that really found a better niche in Ottawa than he had in Toronto and Buffalo. Mm-hmm. He was one of those real good free agent signings. The other guys kind of dwarfed him, and then he actually turned out much more successful. But you wonder if it's a Mark Savard type thing. At this point, you know, just to be he's got a lot of years on his contract. And to your point, Jeff, I think people understand more now that you're not going to get back and play no matter what. Maybe you could have massaged things 10, 15, 20 years ago, but it's a little bit different now.
I agree. And I think that's really a key in this is that we used to be able to think that knee injuries were the worst thing that could ever happen to a hockey player. And nobody ever paid attention to concussions. You know, your bell rung. Well, you know, tape 2 aspirin to your forehead and come back.
Have a nap, come back, you'll be fine. Get back out there.
Yeah, and the severity of it and the long-term effect and with, you know, the concussion, the CTE speculation. I mean, this is real and this is for the rest of his life. And that's what's, my word is simple. It's just sad.
Pierre Dorion also said today that they are looking to make a move to replace him. That is challenging. Now, I know the Ottawa Senators are in a spot right now where they're looking to add for a playoff run. I get that. Some may consider that surprising, but the Ottawa Senators are in a playoff position in the weaker of the two divisions.
It doesn't matter, though. They're still going to make the playoffs if they keep playing this way.
Mm-hmm. You don't think they need one more piece? They need some help for a playoff, whether it's depth or a top six?
Well, I think everybody needs depth. Jeff, you know that. I mean, particularly with the schedule and the way it's going to go is that you need 8 or 9 defensemen. You need 13 forwards. I mean, you need 14 forwards. You need that. You do need that depth. Teams are running 4 lines all the time. Do the Senators, are they able to run 4 lines every night and think that they have a chance?
We always like intrigue on trade deadlines. So when a general manager says he's looking for something, that spices it up a little bit. And it's funny, he would be looking for it differently than, say, maybe Florida is. You know, Florida's got some injuries, and they're looking maybe desperate to just try to get in. Ottawa's just trying to get back to that depth level. I know Casey Bailey, I don't think, is the answer, but I saw him. It's funny, being called up. You think about that Dion Phaneuf trade, and there were all these other pieces that were kind of nondescript, but he was the big UFA who never got drafted from Penn State. I know he's only played 4 games, but they're trying different people out right now. But obviously, like I said, Clark MacArthur was a real good spice for that team, and that's going to be a tough one to replace.
Well, had an element they didn't have.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right, and that's the... I mean, if you're going to have some success, regular season or playoffs, you can't just play hot. And this has been the criticism of the Pittsburgh Penguins sometimes this season, not so much last year, is they play one very specific way. If it can't be a speed finesse game, Pittsburgh sometimes is just out of it. But if you're going to be successful now in the NHL, A, to your point, John, you're rolling 4 lines, and B, you have to be able to adapt and play a number of different styles and different types of game.
Yeah, to me, what the Senators have been able to do this year is that with Guy Boucher basically controlling the big horses, making sure that they become more accountable. I mean, Erik Karlsson, to me, is a more complete player this year than he has been in previous years. And if you look at his numbers, he blocked a lot of shots last year and the year before. He always did. But there is...
Let them block shots last year.
What's that? Yeah.
He led them in block shots.
But yeah, and he's going to lead them again, but he's also going to be in the top 5 in the NHL this year. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're much more responsible in their own zone, which gives them a chance to win. And we talk about Dorion going out and trying to make a trade. Well, I'll tell you what, if he's as successful with the next trade as he was with the last one, and getting Mike Condon for a low-round draft pick, I mean, and Mike Condon, I mean, I shudder to think where they'd be without Mike Condon.
Well, and here's kind of how I look at the Ottawa Senators. And I know that Guy Boucher likes to talk about how, you know, there's a recommitment to defense and that, you know, begets the offense and it all starts there. I kind of look at the Ottawa Senators and I say to myself, maybe the only real difference is they're getting a save this year. Last year, they didn't get a save. This year, they are getting a save. A lot of it is Condon. By the way, good news on the horizon for the Sens. Craig Anderson and his family, certainly his wife as well. Looks like Craig Anderson, Dorion's saying today, coming back late January, early February.
But he hasn't been on the ice, so it's not as if he's going to be able to, you know, come back on a Tuesday and play on a Wednesday.
But Condon's giving him the save. They didn't get that last year.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, it was the Hamburglar. You know, I mean, so two years ago, they were getting goaltending. And it's interesting, you and the two of you talking about the different styles of play. So the goaltending, like Shanny, first of all, it doesn't matter what style you're playing. If you don't have good goaltending, you're not in there. But you can't just play. And this is what I hope Guy Boucher's grown. I think he has from Tampa days, is that there's a number of different styles now, including the track meet. I mean, there really is. That's become, the Pittsburgh Penguins did it last year, that before a coach would always go, oh, man, they open it up. I didn't want them to, you know. And now you've had 4 consecutive nights of at least one game with a total of 10 or more goals. Tonight, of course, would be 5. It would be the first time since 2009 in one of those obscure kind of statistical things. But
good research, it just, Gord.
Thank you. But it shows, of course, I didn't do it. But anyway, it shows that a Washington-Pittsburgh game that was viewed as a marquee gem is 8-7. Yeah. And a New York Ranger team last night that was ticked from what happened against Dallas and played like they were and played to honor their goaltender as well. Yeah. But you're getting more of that. So, and it was a track meet for a while last night between Toronto and New York Rangers. And it's acceptable nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's a track meet sometimes. And you got to be able to run.
Listen, that's the type of hockey I like watching.
Amen.
I want a track meet every night.
But they used to say, I know the fans like it, but we're not going to do it, right? Yeah. Now that's one of the things now. It's like the quarterback and the no huddle that throws all the time.
There's still enough 2-1 games, 3-1 games, 1-1, you know, 1-1 going into the third
period. We had Montreal Detroit at 1-0 on Sunday.
Yeah, on Monday. Yeah, shots, I think, ended up being 20-18. Mm-hmm. I mean, it ended up being both teams saying, you know what, we really want to win, but, you know, damn it, we're not going to lose. Mm-hmm. I mean, they both played trying not to lose the game.
Okay, so that's the snapshot of the Ottawa Senators. To get on the Toronto Maple Leafs page, the Rangers snapping what was a really nice streak for the Toronto Maple Leafs last night. No Morgan Rielly. That is a story. Frank Corrado in. A couple of awkward penalties. You got a turnover here and there. Mike Babcock refusing to comment on the young defenseman.
But what do you expect? I mean, how can
Well, that's just it. He's played one game.
I know.
This season. You can't pin. I know it's a quick default. Okay, Frank Corrado, nothing there. What are they hanging on to this guy for? He comes in, doesn't have a great game, but he has only played the one game.
Sheesh.
But you look at, I mean, listen, man, that was a really speedy Rangers team. And if you look at what the Rangers have traditionally done under Alain Vigneault,
yep,
and it's specifically on the left side, they did it when they had Hagelin, now they have Kreider and Grabner, Rick Nash. They create foot races all over the ice, specifically on the left side. Look, it's the defenseman doesn't make a pass. He lobs it in front. And that left winger is going to beat that right defenseman 9 times out of 10 in a foot race. That's what the Rangers do. Did it again last night.
Well, you know, that was really an impressive team, impressive game. And, of course, having Zibanejad back, they're starting to get healthy. And the Corrado thing we'll talk about after because, I mean, it's like – so much is made of the
that
six
defensemen. That sounds like
the,
his whole
guy.
Career. Corrado, yeah. We'll talk about him after.
Yeah, yeah. Well, about the blame game, which is blatantly unfair. But you know, Michael Grebner, really happy for the guy because last year, you know, it was one of those things, not in a mocking way, but it was absurd. 80 games he played for the Leafs. He had two breakaways a game. Yeah. So he had 160 breakaways. He scored 9 times. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, when a couple of second basemen get the heebies-jeebies in the majors and can't throw to first anymore.
Chuck Knobloch.
Steve Sachs, right? You know, those guys. It's just, again, we're going back. I'm going back. You're pretty current. But anyway, but it was almost like that last year. So, you know, when you saw him again, you go, wow, is he fast. Like, you knew it. But then all of a sudden, now he's getting goals. Now he's leading them in scoring. And I know one was an empty netter last night, but the last one was the deal breaker. And he had two or three other chances. Like, he seems as fast as anybody in the league.
You can't help but be impressed with what the Rangers do, I think, at both ends of the ice. When, you know, so much of their team, Tortorella era and a little bit after, was dependent on their four defensemen, the big four and the king, and maybe Rick Nash will do something and we'll get a goal here or there. But I'll tell you what, they have some depth. They're able to run those lines. I mean, they're an impressive group. Zuccarello again last night, a great play on Kadri to set up the first goal. Shea scores the goal. I mean, there's a young defenseman. It's good. It's important.
You guys ready for this?
Oh, no. What are we doing?
The Toronto Maple Leafs have claimed, off waivers, Seth Griffith.
Well, I saw he went on waivers again. Oh. Wow.
Just when you think.
And nobody got hurt.
He's this month's Reed Boucher then. So, because that's what happened to Reed Boucher between Nashville and New Jersey a couple times.
So there's that waiver bounce back between the Florida Panthers and Toronto Maple Leafs with Seth Griffith.
Well, they really, in Florida, tried to make him a first-line guy. I mean, it wasn't, you know, they
but that was out of necessity, though. I mean, Huberto's out, Barkov with the upper,
well,
he's out.
Yeah. An element of that, March. But quite often you move other guys up and put them on the third line. I'm just, you know, there seems to be a consensus there that there's something here. That, like, we just talked about Michael Grabner. He doesn't have Michael Grabner speed, but there's something there that this guy could be a core six forward.
Jeff, you've been watching Seth Griffith for
since
a long time.
Since London.
Since
London.
What do you think?
Hands.
Yeah. That's what he's got.
He's got hands.
Yeah. But well, not
good,
much else.
That's a good start, though.
Yeah.
So I didn't say he's skated, you know, like Michael Grabner.
In some ways, he almost looks like that guy, we've seen it countless times, who's sort of stuck in that no man's land between too good for the American League.
Yeah. He's a 4A guy.
Challenging to stick with an NHL team. Yeah. It's got to be... The NHL is, I mean, the history is
so they need
full,
the WHA.
Full,
he needs Westrum's. The WHA, right? Wide open, well, WHA, make big money.
That's what Europe is now. That's what Europe
that's true.
Is. That's what
that's
Europe
true.
Is now. So I think there's
a good player there. I think a lot, and this, obviously Toronto does.
Yeah.
At certain times the Florida Panthers do as well, depending on who's on waivers and who needs what when. There's a player there. You know it, John. You've watched him since London, too.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he and Nas were together.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and you wonder if, and Mark Haddam and Mark Hunter, you know the morning call today is when Lou is sitting around the table and he's got the speakerphone going and says, okay, Griffiths, what do we want to do? What do we want to do? You know, Mark Hunter is sitting there, who recruited him to play for the Knights, is sitting there saying, this guy has something. We should keep him. And eventually... I mean, I think, you know, eventually, with due respect to the player, I mean, he's a Marley. He can't be right now, but he'll be a Marley.
He's on his way.
Oh, he was. Okay, on there you way. Go. He's already gone to, and again, you know, looking for depth at the American League.
So that's right. So because the Maple Leafs had him.
That's right.
When you put him on waivers again, yep. And nobody claims him, the last team can claim him and send him directly to the Marlins.
Right,
so that was always the problem, and that's the problem of Frankie Corrado as well. Maybe they'll rethink that. I don't know, but that's been the problem too. They don't think they could get him down. So now they knew they could get him down.
That's right.
What'd you make of the effort last night for the Maple Leafs?
Oh, I thought they believed their 9-1-1 record. I thought it was a press clippings night. It was as Gordy talked about, it was a team that was desperate, a team that was embarrassed, a team that really had to prove that they're, you know, the Dallas Stars came into their barn and they had them 7-3 before they woke up. I think the Rangers believed they had to. Now, the Rangers are the best road team in hockey, I think 16 wins. But at the same time, the Maple Leafs, they coasted.
Mm-hmm.
They coasted for time. Every once in a while, you saw one of the young guys do something great. Whether it was
usually
the
Mitch Marner. I thought Marner was good all three periods.
Sure he was, but Matthews made one move on Lundqvist. Marner made a couple of plays. The Hyman shorthanded goal. It's always the kids right now that are creating the impetus for this team to get back in games. But it just wasn't enough. The Rangers were relentless. The Rangers played it 60 minutes rather than the Leafs, who probably played 30 minutes. And that's what, and I think that's what Mike said after the game.
Coaches never love to lose. Certainly, Mike Babcock's top of that list. But do you think part of that entire coaching staff are okay with that loss last night? Because to John's point, now you've got the room again. Now you've got the guys. Now it's a loss. Now you go back to work. Now you can calm the media down a little bit about, as Ron Wilson said, building the statues.
And I've heard coaches say that after a losing streak, the line would be, well, at least they'll listen to me tomorrow in practice, because you get going and it's all, so exactly that point, not that you say they want to lose, but it's kind of understood. Okay, we got to regroup. We're going to get in the huddle. And now you got to listen to me. We don't go run out four long bomb patterns and one of us catches on a play we drew in the dirt. It's interesting, the atmosphere before the game. The town, the Leaf fans, they've all bought in, as they should.
Oh, yeah.
All excited. So there's a kind of an eerie calmness, an understated excitement. And everyone's in their seats early on even. They're not even hanging in the Air Canada Club and whatever. They're actually in their seats. And then game gets going, and they're getting killed by the Rangers, outplayed. But it's 2-1. Lo and behold, Mitch Marner, this is what's going to happen. This happens all the time. There's games we deserve to win, we win. There's games we don't deserve to win, we find a way to win. Mitch Marner doesn't score. Rangers come right back and score. And that was it. But up till then, it was like the goaltender had been the only great player for them, and it would have been a 2-2 tie, because Marner is more often than not going to bury those. And that's the way the team's right now. No even mock cheer booing at the end about stuff. You know, game ended, whatever. Everybody left dutifully, and forgot about that. You do lose the odd time.
And team defense is another thing that, I mean, you could sit here and blame the defense, because the Rangers, I mean, the first two Ranger goals for sure. I mean, there were five Rangers almost below the circles, and Freddie Anderson's sprawled on the ice, and the defenseman can't even find where the puck is. But it's more than the defense. I don't think the forwards were helping very much in their own zone either by the end of the night. So to me, it was one of those ones where, I mean, it would be fun at practice to be a fly on the wall today and in the video session, because I'm sure that Mike, in his own pragmatic style, would be making sure that everybody understands that tomorrow's an important game and they better play a different game than they did last
expectation
night.
Expectation Morgan Rielly back tomorrow? Not in a boot, no crutches. I mean, it looked like it could have been a lot worse.
I tell you what.
He went down in the carry.
All I know is don't rush him. All I know is don't rush him. You know, it's a game in January. They have games in hand. Don't rush him.
I mean, I'm more curious to see if P.K. Subban comes back this weekend, because there was some talk.
There was some talk about last night.
So, but in Morgan,
they had Ryan Ellis, they were fine, two goals.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, it's funny about practice as well. And Mike Babcock right away kind of said, well, gave him the day off, right? You know, it didn't work. And talking to Dave Maloney, the Ranger broadcaster last night, and he just where different guys live, to live in Manhattan, to live where? And he said, you know, everyone, we practice so little now. We have so few skates. Like, it's changing guys thinking about where they live now in the New York area anyway, because before you had to go out wherever Westchester County, whatever the rink was, and not as many lived in the city. But now the day a game skates in the city, you don't go out as much, and guys are rethinking it and that. I mean, it's just...
That did change. That, and Messier started to change that, though.
But it was changing back a bit. He said, yeah, anyway, yeah. Whatever, but just, wow. Yeah. But just about that, about it's funny about... Mm. Practice time, you know, practice time was so valuable that way. Now, talk to Larry Brooks, but talk to Dave Maloney about it too, just, you know, where you lived in different spots there. So,
you want to have a quick thought about, not that the entire game was about Frank Corrado, but he has become, in some regards, a cult figure in Toronto. 21 straight games, but, not playing.
By the way, through
plays
this whole,
last night.
Through the whole thing with the cult figure being in Toronto, he's still a bit of a cult figure in Vancouver. Because they, you know, the fans loved Corrado there, too.
All they had to do was send Ben Hutton down in training camp, and they could have kept both, John.
Don't worry. Vancouver Canuck fans understand that. So the Corrado watch in Toronto is mirrored a bit by a mini Corrado watch in Vancouver, because I do think that there's a real belief that if he ever gets put on waivers...
Oh, he'll be grabbed.
That he'll end up in Vancouver again at some point. I mean, he certainly would never get through the Canucks, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I wonder if... Because this is year two, okay? Year one is understood as an apprenticeship. You know, it's like Roger Staubach having to do his military obligation, whatever it may be. And then these mini fervent support things. Like, now you're saying... People are probably wondering, can he play at the NHL? I know they'd say, oh, you're practicing, doing all these things. You've got a few American Hockey League games in. He actually did play more games last year than I thought, but they were at the end. Yeah. You know, when they, hate to say it, really didn't matter so much. So it is, you know, like last night's game, first of all, you lose Morgan Riley, who's one of your top D. So everyone moves up commensurately. Yeah. So Frankie Corrado's going in as a guy that his second NHL game of the season. He played a whack with the Marlies. But anyway, and all of a sudden, but he's the third pair.
Yeah.
So it's other guys moving up.
It does sound like Martin Marincin's coming back in. So that means Frankie will be with us in the press box again.
All right, very good.
Well, not for Frankie.
Well, no. He might like the ice cream sandwiches, okay. Gord. So.
Maple Leafs facing off against the Ottawa Senators tomorrow, the Battle of Ontario, once again. Elsewhere around the NHL, it was the New York Islanders under Doug Weight, interim head coach, blank the Dallas Stars yesterday. John Tavares, who two goals, one of them undressing John Klingberg in front of the net. And when you look at this Islanders team, it almost feels as if there's two types of auditions going on right now. One, everybody outside of John Tavares auditioning for Doug Weight / Gar Snow, trying to show they belong on this team and they can stay. And Jack Capuano wasn't using me right. And he should have been using Strome like this and should have been using DeHaan like that. And then there's the entire organization, which seems to be auditioning for John Tavares with every move they make, trying to convince John Tavares to re-up with the Islanders, which he can do come this July 1st. How'd you read A last night? And this weird dynamic where the players are auditioning for the coach and the organization is auditioning for the franchise centerman.
I saw really, you know, another other part was it was the emergence of Garth Snow to do media stuff. So he seemed to be sending a subtle message that Andrew Ladd's been hurt all season.
Yeah.
You know, there seemed to be one of those to say, cut some slack that really, anyway, that was another message got out of it. But I think it's healthy now that everything's on the table. He professes that the new ownership's great for him. Who knows?
We'll believe that.
Well, that's good. If he, you know, but he would have to say that anyway, I would think. Or you wouldn't say it. So the fact he said it then probably adds credence to what you say about believing it. So I don't know whether they're going to expand that the hockey office and the management style, but still, you got to get guys on the ice to do things. And you know, just last summer, sometimes I said there's two things that didn't make sense. There's probably many more, but one was. When Patrick Waugh left in the middle of the season, in the middle of summer, that doesn't happen very often. That says some warning bells, something's not right. Certainly Colorado hasn't been right. Islanders kept saying, okay, which one of these guys are they going to make the last-minute push? Now, apparently they did for Franz Nielsen, so they kind of put all their eggs in one basket. None of them came through. So then you started doing the math and saying, well, Okposo and Nielsen, and you bring in whatever, and that just doesn't seem to jive. And you know what? It didn't jive. So somewhat expected that way.
John, final thought to you before we go to break.
Well, first of all, I mean, a lot of this is on Garth. A lot of this is on Garth of how he's managed it, how he's managed the free agents they had last year. I do think that when you get closer to players and you live with them for 5 or 6 years, you see as many warts as you do all of their strengths. And I think that's what happened. I truly think that's what's happened there. I think the goalie controversy that they had all season long with the three goalies, to the point where there were stories going around that Garth was actually telling Jack who to play as the goaltender. Mm. I think those things happen. But in the end, this is a year where the ownership is going to put a better stamp on this organization. They are adding another body to hockey operations. There's going to be a president, there's going to be a general manager, and there's going to be a coach, whether it's Doug Wade or not.
President and GM are two separate people?
Two separate people. Yeah. That's going to happen. It may happen in the summertime. It may happen next week. Who knows? But, you know, it's going to happen. And I believe Garchnot is one of those two guys. I think Garchnot is in this organization, going to be one of those two guys. And then this summer, the long-term discussion about who the coach will be will continue. And because I don't think there's any point in changing Dougie Wade at this point. You know what? He's going to have the 10-game. He's going to have the 10-game glow. You know, they're going to play great for 10 games. Tell us what happens in his tenure, games 11 through 20, and then we'll have a better clue.
Mm-hmm. On that, we'll wrap. That's the first segment of the broadcast. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk with Ron Robinson, the Western Hockey League commissioner. We'll get into the minimum wage lawsuit that has been filed some time ago over 42 teams in both the OHL and Western Hockey League. A report coming out from accounting firm KPMG, analyzed by Dr. Norm O'Reilly at Ohio University. We'll get into that with Ron Robinson. The financial state of the Western and Ontario Hockey Leagues next, as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on the NHL Network.
Now, prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard alongside John Shannon and Gord Stellick. Still want to talk a little bit about the Washington Capitals.
How do you trump that? Oh, sorry.
Nice. We'll talk about Jake Allen and the double goalie pull last
night. He's been waiting 40 minutes to do that.
I know. I almost missed the show. I was watching the inauguration.
I'm trying not to encourage him, you understand, Gord.
I understand.
No, I'm not making any political comment.
No. Save that for Twitter, John. In the meantime, let's turn our attention now to the CHL, being joined now by the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, Ron Robinson. Ron, how are you today, sir? Nice to be joined by you today.
Very good. Thanks very much for having me, guys.
Well, we were talking a little bit before break and just sort of teeing this up. The minimum wage lawsuit, which continues, this is for fans that may not be aware, only involving the Ontario Hockey League and the Western Hockey League. So we're talking about 42 teams. None of the players involved in the suit are part of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. And we've seen most recently the CHL has retained the services of accounting firm KPMG to do a sort of audit or have a look at the books. You could describe it better than I can of what is actually happening with these 42 teams. And then I spoke with Dr. Norm O'Reilly yesterday from Ohio University to sort of give his perspective on it and how these teams are doing. From your purview, and we've talked about this before, the feeling had generally been one third of the teams in the CHL are making money, one third aren't, and the other third, well, we'll just see how the season goes. From your perch, how the financial stability or viability of these 42 teams that we have in question in your league and in the Ontario League?
Well, Jeff, first of all, I think it's important to understand that the reason that we commissioned these studies and had KPMG compile the financial information and then subsequently Dr. O'Reilly provide his expert analysis is that we have a responsibility first and foremost to our players and our parents to ensure that they have all the information that they require and understand our position in this matter. And as we've historically said, based on our internal reporting, the majority of our teams either break even or lose money each season. And so much of this, course, is based on perception rather than the facts, and we felt it was important that we obtain a critical view of this through a credible firm and an expert, and as a result, that information was compiled, and Dr. O'Reilly, the information was compiled rather by KPMG, and then Dr. O'Reilly, of course, has provided his expert analysis, and he's very familiar with junior hockey as a Canadian, and certainly who's also very familiar with the amateur sports scene here in Canada.
Ronnie, do you think that this study proved out what you have been saying all along?
Yes, I think it was necessary, first of all, to do a five-year period to go look back and review the results. The information compiled by KPMG was from the actual team financial statements and tax returns. Dr. O'Reilly, of course, had access to both the KPMG and the actual team financial information. And then through that study, it clearly indicates that it validates what we've been saying all along, that the majority of our teams either in a break-even position or lose money.
And now, Ron, I know you can't speak for the other side, but certainly probably a lot of people early on thought maybe this would go away. It hasn't. And I'm just curious, so where do we sit now in layman's terms for the average fan that has heard about this thing for a while? You're going to get a reaction back? Is it heading towards court? I mean, where do you feel it's going?
Well, the case, first of all, has not been certified. It does involve all of the CHL. At this particular stage, the first hearing, the certification hearing, that is, will be held in Alberta, in Calgary, from February 7th to 10th, and that will be the first test to determine whether this particular case will be certified. And then from there, in March, there's a similar certification hearing scheduled in Ontario. I think the important thing here is to understand that we're going to obviously take the position that we're very concerned as to the precedent this would set. It's not only about the Canadian Hockey League, it's about amateur sport in this country, and we need to protect the interests of these athletes who wish to play at the top level of the system and benefit from programs such as our scholarship program across the Canadian Hockey League.
I was going to ask you about, when you talk about the amount of money that teams make or don't make, where does the scholarship program in the two leagues, in the Ontario and the Western League, fit in?
Well, it's important to note that I think it doesn't get much attention at all, but just in the past five-year period, which is the period in which KPMG and O'Reilly report covers, the OHL and the WHL, that just is the two leagues, not including Quebec, over 3,000 scholarships and an investment by our clubs of $20 million during that period. And this particular season, we have 650 scholarships, which represents a $4 million investment by our WHL and OHL clubs. And, of course, the great part about this is not only can the players move on and select the post-secondary course of their choice, but we have 388 of those graduates just from the OHL and the Western League playing Canadian university hockey this year as well.
But the elephant in the room is that you have, in either both of the leagues, you have a few teams making a lot of money. And really what happens then is that the teams that don't, I assume, get caught up in the backwash of all of this, and that they could end up folding.
Well, that's right, John. The reality is, as Dr. O'Reilly has indicated, that if you were to add minimum wage to our current benefit package that we provide the players, including the scholarship program, 80% of our player or 80% of our teams in the OHL and the WHL would be in a loss position. And the unfortunate thing there would be, it would put our teams in a position as to whether they could continue to operate. But more importantly, this would result in fewer opportunities for the players to take advantage of the scholarship program and play in what arguably is the best development league in the world.
And that's where I was hoping to head with this too, Ron. Let's say this is successful and, you know, the 42 teams and Quebec League perhaps as well are forced to pay minimum wage. Does that mean, in your estimation, the end of the scholarship program across the CHL?
Well, it would certainly make the immediate impact would be that there would be fewer teams and fewer opportunities for players. There's no question about it. I think, as everyone is fully aware, many of our markets across the country and the Canadian Hockey League are in small centers, the majority of which are under 100,000 population, but many of our small markets would have very difficult time operating under those circumstances. There's no question. But our concern as well extends beyond just the Canadian Hockey League. It extends us into the areas of amateur hockey. We are major junior hockey and registered within the Canadian amateur hockey system. How can you distinguish between major junior hockey, junior A hockey, junior B hockey for that matter, or any other amateur sports organization as a result of this particular case? So it has broad implications potentially.
Now, I'm just wondering the breakdown, whether you know or don't know, I don't know, about the players that are, or the parents that are most actively involved. So is it people that aren't taking advantage of the educational package and want something? Or, you know, I mean, because everyone goes in there knowing there isn't a minimum wage right at the start. So is it people at the end that go, this matters nothing to me, so I should get some money so I can get a fresh start in business? I mean, what is that? What is the most radical or the most aggressive group?
Well, I think it's a case that in a lot of cases, quite frankly, they're driven by this perception that the teams are highly profitable and that the players are not being treated fairly. And that is just not the case. We clearly have a very extensive benefit program for the players, including the scholarship program. And I think what happens is that rather than looking at the actual information and the facts of the matter and that the challenges that our teams have to continue to operate, they're looking at it in a sense that they're isolating maybe one or two teams and suggesting that those teams are highly profitable, and rather than looking at it objectively and saying these teams are having a difficult time continuing to operate.
The one thing that I would be curious about, and I'm not sure, Ron, if you even know this information, of the former players that are involved in this class action suit, do we know how many took the package, the education package?
Well, some of them are, actually. I don't want to really comment on the proceedings or the individual players themselves. There's a limited number of players who have come forward, and I think anybody who's involved in the game is going to understand from time to time there's going to be certain individual players who look back on their experience. But suffice to say that players who have taken this action are actually benefiting, as we speak, from the scholarship program.
Interesting, and it continues. Ron, thank you as always for your time. I know you're very, very busy, certainly with the Western Hockey League, the top prospects game on the horizon, where the Western Hockey League, I believe, has a number one prospect in Nolan Patrick with the Brandon Wheat Kings, and I'm sure you're very excited about that.
Let's hope we can talk hockey next time for sure, guys.
That'd be
thanks
nice.
Very much.
That'd
thanks,
be nice.
Ron. Much appreciated. Right, see, the way that I look at it is, as a parent, and my kids are very young, 6 and 5, but if my kids ever got to the level of making a junior hockey team, and a junior hockey operator said to me, as their parent, would you rather we pay your child minimum wage or provide the scholarship for them? I'm taking the scholarship 7 days a week, all day long.
Well, I can speak as an uncle to my brother Bob's son, Robert. Played 2 years in Belleville with George Burnett and got treated very well. You know when you go in, and then used the educational package to go to Queens for 2 years and is now a lawyer. And again, I'm not doing a soapbox one side over the other.
Yeah.
I'm just saying because so that was a positive in that way at the end. The other point that John brings up, though, I mean, you look at Portland versus Medicine Hat, for example.
Absolutely.
And that's one. So everyone looks at Portland. You look at London, right? I mean, Medicine Hat, there's some of these that are true mom-and-pop organizations.
Owen Sound. Look at Owen Sound.
Swift Current. Yeah. Swift Current is probably the best example out
but
of all
the other
them.
People argue, equity-wise, you can sell it in a second and make that. But again, then you argue, well, we're looking at year-to-year expenses. You get all kinds of arguments. But there are legitimate mom-and-pop operations, and there are ones that have hit a certain stratosphere that probably never was expected. So that is the big thing about the perception, but what is the reality?
You know, Scott Abbott, who for the longest time, owns the
North
battalion,
yeah,
owned them in Brampton. At the end of the year, his team never made money. Never made money. And Scott would never say anything publicly. And so, but if you knew the ins and outs of what was going on in junior hockey, at the end of the year, all Scott Abbott did would write one check just to get back to zero. And, he did it for himself because he loves the game. He did it for the community. And that's what he's doing in North Bay as well. So it's you understand the concept of what people are saying, but at the same time, that it's they're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater if they do this. And if the ruling goes in certain ways, and it's in my estimation, it's a shame, and it could be a real right turn to how hockey players are developed in Canada, and will have a huge effect in the United States as well. It really will, because there'll be more Canadian kids wanting to go play hockey in the United States.
Yeah. Oh, it's already that is certainly more of a trend now than it's ever been.
It's going to get bigger if this is the case.
Off the CHL page, back to the NHL page here on Hockey Central at noon. Jake Allen's struggles continue after surrendering the crease for 3 games to Carter Hutton. Jake Allen starts last night against the Washington Capitals, gets torched for 2 goals on 3 shots, gets the hook from Ken Hitchcock. 2 minutes later, he goes back in after staring daggers at Hitchcock
he
on the bench.
He did it last year, too. Yeah.
I think everyone stares daggers right now for some reason. I don't know. It seems to be
Lehner on Bylsma, Price on Therrien. It has become more of a thing around the NHL, and if you cheer for chaos like I do, you love it. But how do we read the situation with the goaltending in St. Louis? Because you look at the team, it's a good team, and it's a Western Conference that isn't as strong as it has been traditionally.
Let me ask you this.
The opportunity is there.
Are they better than last year?
I look at St. Louis and I say, this is the year they take half a step back.
Yes.
And they transition from that Backes-Steen group to a group that's Backes-Steen and Bouwmeester. And this is when they transition to Tarasenko, Laterra, Schwartz, Fabry, and Colton Parayko. Yeah.
But saying all that, the playoffs become a different animal. So in taking a half step back, quite often when you make it in the playoffs, but the big thing is your goaltender has to get hot. And, you know, you just, and Ken Hitchcock knows that better than anybody about, you know, from Philadelphia days within different goaltending. Mike Kitchen had a crack being a head coach in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. The goaltending was indifferent. That's a polite term. Okay, that who knows what kind of head coach. I know he still believes, even though he's had a great career as an assistant, you know, that could have been the case. So Hitchcock, too, it's funny. So it's four of his last six games he's had to pull him.
Yep.
And then Hitch, just his press conference kind of, he kept going there, then kept pulling back, but kind of saying, yeah, it's not really good for the whole team when something's out of whack. Like, you all start thinking different, like, maybe we shouldn't allow any shots on goal. You know? So that's a whole different style of play.
Listen, I like to think of myself as a bit of a golfer every once in a while. Mm. You know what? Jake Allen's got the yips. Jake Allen's got the yips right now.
There's a difference. Listen, we've talked about it before. There's a difference between being the nice guy backup, staying out with a couple of extra buckets of pucks, and the pressures of being a starting goaltender.
But his skill set as a goaltender has not changed. I mean, he still does the right things. He and Jim Corsi are working hard. They're doing everything in practice properly every day. But when he gets on the ice and under the big lights of Broadway, you get the yips. And that's what he's got. He's got the yips.
Well, welcome
right
back
there.
To the crease. Here's the Washington Capitals.
Well, but listen, if he's going to be your number one goalie, I mean, it's funny to say that.
I get that, but that's another seven spot. The Washington
puts up.
It's
funny you say that because on Wednesday in Montreal, everybody said, yeah, Carey Price is going to love it because he likes the adversity of playing the best teams, and it's Pittsburgh. Well, you know what? Jake Allen would have loved having the start against the Washington Capitals to prove everybody wrong. But Jake Allen's got the yips right now, and he's got to play through it. He's got to fight through it, and he's a strong enough young guy to be able to do that. It's just going to take time, and it doesn't help. It doesn't help to get pulled. It doesn't help.
And you mentioned Washington, so seven goals, seven different goal scorers,
yes.
13 different players get a point. All 12 forwards get at least 1 point.
That's right.
I mean, you want to talk about depth and balance and all that. So, I mean, Jake Allen.
Even that fourth line. Jay Beagle got one to kick it off yesterday. Daniel Winnick on that line. Tom Wilson as well. They're getting contribute. You're right, up and down that lineup. Washington's getting it.
They're flying. I mean, the from the moment they beat Columbus to end that streak, they have been pretty impressive. Except, well, the night in Pittsburgh where they scored seven and lost. Now they score seven and win.
They're up three Cobb and somehow it turns into 87 again.
Yeah.
Hey, sorry, last one because, like, can you do anything about what happened in Anaheim again? Do you have to rethink?
Oh.
Well, neither, but just the whole machinations, the way it played out. I mean, it was like a rain delay in baseball with no rain. Right? You know, it was...
Not to have glass cut is embarrassing.
But
not to have a piece of glass cut is embarrassing.
Talked to someone on my way home yesterday in the NHL. I said the exact same thing. How does that happen?
And the
problem... How is that possible?
You know, Danny Craig has a lot on his plate. Danny Craig was here last night in Toronto looking in, checking the ice as he always does and looking around and touring the buildings. And for him to start getting the emails, because trust me, he would start getting the emails about what's going on there. I mean, they not to have two or three pieces of glass cut, you know, the short stuff, the long stuff, that's embarrassing.
You know who was a star out of it all last night, too? I mean, Ahlers and Hayward have to, you know, work overtime.
Julie Stewart-Binks,
yeah. Who interviewed, I think, just about everybody on the... She interviewed Paul McClain twice. Mm-hmm. Okay? I mean, you always go back to, you know, Paul McClain because he's there. I thought Julie Stewart-Binks last night, and John, you know her certainly from her background here in Toronto around the OHL and now FS1 on her way to ESPN. I thought she was outstanding last... Because that's where you have to tap dance. That's not just, I'm preparing for one interview. I'm going to talk to Trent Yanni for 30 seconds at a break. This is, okay, get out there and talk to Corey Perreault. Get out there, talk to Richie. Get out there, talk to Mac. Like...
But they should learn, the ringside reporters should learn how to cut glass. Yeah. Right? Because they're the ones going to be most affected. So they should take like a little course
there
with the weld.
First game I ever produced, Toronto Maple Leafs, New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden. The door and the Zamboni broke. We had a 38-minute delay at Madison Square Garden in 1979.
What do you got to get a new door or just to...
They had to go get... the hinges all broke, you know. The garden wasn't in great shape back then.
The way the Leafs were, they could have played in one end back then.
Just kept. So what'd you do, John?
We danced.
How'd you tap dance,
we
John?
We danced. That was my pal Dave Hodge. He did a magnificent job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Paul McLean on twice.
No, you access to team and players in 1979? Are you kidding me?
JSB was great, too, because you can tell that Paul McLean, the second go-around, was like, oh, okay, so you were just tap dancing to fill time here. So good for Julie Stewart Binks on that one. Thanks to Ron Robertson for dropping by the broadcast today. Tomorrow it is Ottawa and Toronto. We have the Battle of Ontario. We have the Battle of Alberta,
yes,
John,
sir,
as well. So it's a big
back
night.
Back to the home and home.
And hockey night in Canada. Enjoy it. We're back Monday for more Hockey Central at noon. Have a great weekend.